Welcome to Dr. Creepin's Dungeon. Well, it has been said that mannequins are the artificial intelligence of the modeling industry. But what if they're more than that? What if they're the artificial intelligence behind more horrific things? We may find such in tonight's Tales of Terror. Well, as always, before we begin, a word of caution. Tonight's tales may contain strong language, as well as descriptions of violence and horrific imagery. If that sounds like your kind of thing, then let's begin. The Mannequin by Joe Rocks, 28. Why are mannequins so scary? What is it about them that creeps us out? Is it because they look like one of us, human-like? Have you ever seen a mannequin move without noticing when you're not around or looking, well, or is it all just in your mind? For Luke and Judy, they were about to find out just how creepy a mannequin can be. 2 months had passed since the brother and sister, Luke and Judy, lost their mother. It's especially hard for them since both were so young. Judy was 12 and Luke had just turned 17 2 days before his mother had passed away. Just as it hurt both of them to lose a mother, it was also hard to lose a wife. Daniel Brolin, Judy and Luke's father, couldn't live to see another day after his wife Virginia passed away. He was lifeless without her, no longer cared for the living. He loved her so much he couldn't picture his life without her after she died unexpectedly. As hard as it was for the Brolin family, they had no other choice but to continue with life and overcome the death of someone they loved deeply. Waking up every day wouldn't be the same. Luke knew he kind of had to play a grown-up now, seeing his dad so miserable and vulnerable to be there for him and for Judy. He sometimes had to ask a neighbor to check up on his dad, since there were times he wouldn't pick up his phone while they were at school. One morning, when both of them were heading out, Judy and Luke saw their father sleeping on the couch with some empty beer cans on the floor. Judy walked up to her father and hugged him. "Things will get better, Dad. You still have us." Well, today would be the day things would change for everybody. When both of them got home from school that day, they were treated to a surprise from their dad, who for the first time had a smile on his face. "Ah, this might seem a bit unorthodox, but I want you two to meet someone." They had no idea what their dad was talking about until they both saw a mannequin standing in the corner of the living room. "Dad, why is there a mannequin in the corner of the room?" "Oh, I got her at the thrift store. Wanted to buy some used clothes, but I saw this on display for $10 and thought, what a bargain." The mannequin was of a woman, a very creepy looking one. She had no hair and big brown eyes staring at the floor. Both Luke and Judy didn't know how to react or what to say. "Well, come on, guys, I bought Chai Kao Chinese today. Dinner's at the table." Both of them couldn't take their eyes off of the mannequin. Judy in particular was so creeped out her face turned pale. She had no idea if her dad had gone mental for buying a mannequin, or if it was just the really low price. They all tried to eat dinner as a family for the first time, but Judy and Luke were so perplexed by this mannequin. "Can someone please turn the mannequin to the wall? It's creeping me out," asked Judy. Their dad looked confused. Luke got up and walked over to the mannequin and picked it up. "Oh, why don't you bring her to the kitchen with us?" asked Daniel.
"Dad, don't you think it's a bit weird?"
"Ah, come on, guys, it's just a mannequin. She'll just stand there," he laughed. Luke didn't listen to his dad and faced the mannequin to the wall.
"Well, it's, kind of creeping me out too, Dad."
"Ah, okay. Not a problem, guys. I'll get rid of it tomorrow." To that, Judy let out a sigh of relief. "Come on, guys, let's continue eating. I feel a bit tired." Later that night, Judy came into Luke's room.
"Luke, I need a huge favor. Can you please get me a glass of water from the kitchen? I can't with that stupid thing in the living room."
"Oh, Judy, I'm asleep. Look, it won't do anything to you." Judy shoved Luke.
"Come on, I'm thirsty."
"All right, fine."
Luke got up and walked over to the kitchen, but saw the mannequin was not in the same spot that they left it. In fact, it had gone. Oh, Dad must have gotten rid of it. As Luke was pouring water into a glass, a cup fell down from the counter, and right in the corner of the kitchen was the mannequin. Luke was startled with the image, but soon ignored it and walked back to his room and handed Judy the glass of water. Thank you, big brother. Hey, Dad moved the mannequin to the kitchen, in case you're wondering. Well, I'll make sure not to go in the kitchen then. Judy drank her water and exited the room. Good night. But as Judy walked out the room, she saw the mannequin standing right in the middle of the hallway. Well, she instantly got scared and ran back into Luke's room. Hey, I thought you said the mannequin was in the kitchen. You moved it to the hallway to scare me. No, I didn't. Luke got up and saw that the mannequin was, in fact, in the hallway. He turned on the lights and stared face cold at it. He slowly walked up to it and looked it in the eyes as if she were real. Did Dad move it? Well, the thing's not going to move itself. Luke picked up the mannequin and took it to the living room, facing the window. I'm sure it looks creepier from the outside. Well, let's go to bed. I'm tired. Oh, please stop adjourning my nights. The next day, Luke and Judy took off to school without seeing their dad around or the mannequin. Worried, Luke knocked on his bedroom door. Dad, you okay? There was no answer. So Luke walked off, and they both got on the bus to school. When they came home from school, they were greeted by their dad's psychiatrist, Dr. Green. Hello, children. How's your school today? Both of them looked confused. What's going on? Is Dad okay? He's fine. He's in the kitchen. Luke took a glance over at the kitchen and saw his dad cooking. Well, something else immediately caught his attention. Yes, it was the mannequin sitting at the dinner table. Only this time it was wearing a brown wig reminiscent of his mother's hair. What the hell's going on, Dad? Now. Let me speak with both of you outside, please. Judy was enraged with what she saw, and sure wasn't happy about Dr. Green and what he had to say. Well, your father called me today. As you can see, he's brought a mannequin into the house.
Yeah, we want him to get rid of it.
Well, I understand, but it won't be easy. I, too, have told your father that this isn't right and he needs to learn to let go.
What do you mean by let go?
Asked Judy. That mannequin. Your father sees it as his wife, Virginia, your mother. Look, people grieve in all sorts of ways, and this whole thing, well, being very unorthodox, it's something that's temporary.
I can't accept this.
Yelled Judy. You have to. For your father. Your father's depressed and he needs you two to be there. If you're not, then who knows what'll happen. Like I said, this'll only be temporary. I'll see him every day to slowly convince him that Virginia is no longer with us in heart and spirit. Look, have a great day, okay?
And the therapist left, leaving Judy and Luke to deal with their dad.
Hey, hello, offspring. Come sit down. Food's almost ready.
Well, their dad was in a great mood. But they were both reluctant to even come near the dinner table. Their dad started to serve them food on their plates, even some for the mannequin. He sat down and joined them, and began eating. Luke and Judy hadn't even touched their food.
Hey, what's wrong? I thought you all loved Mom's meatloaf. Cooked it exactly how she did. Isn't that right, Virginia?
The dad then turned to look at the mannequin with an enormous smile. Luke and Judy looked quite disturbed.
No, Mom's dead, right, Dad?
Asked Judy.
No, she's not. She's right here, sitting down with us.
Dad,
that's a mannequin.
Mom is dead. Enough!
You will respect this dinner table and mention nothing of your mother being dead. That goes for you too, Luke. Your mother is not dead.
Silence filled the room as Daniel was eating in a rage.
Then he started letting out tears.
God, I just want us to be a family again. I want my family back.
We're right here, Dad. We're not going anywhere.
Yeah. Thank you, Luke.
Luke and Judy then realized that they were going to have to pretend, just for a short while, that their own dead mother was this mannequin, not to upset their father. Later that evening, Judy went into Luke's room.
We have to get rid of that mannequin, said Judy.
We can't. We don't know how Dad'll get.
I can't live in this house thinking that my mom's alive when she's not. This is only depressing me even more. I know Dad's in pain, but think what I'm going through. Once Dad realizes the mannequin's gone, he'll snap out of it.
There's a darkness in Dad, Luke. I don't think it'll go away.
Okay. We'll take the mannequin tomorrow and borrow Mama's car in the garage to go to school, and we'll dump it somewhere, Luke said.
Thank you, Luke.
The next morning, Luke took the keys to his mom's car and saw the mannequin sitting down on the couch. He grabbed it and took it with him to the car.
Hey, you coming?
I'm not riding with that thing in the car. I'm taking the bus, said Judy.
So Luke put the mannequin in the back seat and took off. He drove his way towards school, constantly looking at the rearview mirror where the mannequin was looking. Directly at him, through the reflection. He stopped the car and saw a nearby dumpster outside of a mom and pop store. He took the mannequin and threw it inside. He looked around to see if anyone saw him, as if he was disposing of a dead body. But, well, there was no one in sight. So he took off rapidly, soon arriving at school. Later on in the day, Judy texted Luke.
Did you get rid of it?
Luke responded.
Yeah, threw it outside Letty's barbecue dumpster.
Luke stepped out of class to go to the restroom when he heard footsteps running towards him. Whoever the person was pushed Luke inside the restroom. It was his father, Daniel. Daniel grabbed Luke by his shoulders, gripping hard and looking extremely furious.
Where is your mother?
Dad... What are you talking about?
You know damn fucking well what I'm talking about, you little shit.
Then Daniel grabbed Luke's right ear and squeezed it, causing Luke to slowly go down on his knees from the pain.
Dad, you're hurting me.
Where is she, Luke? Before I rip it off.
Okay, she's in the dumpster by Letty's barbecue, screamed Luke.
Daniel let go and composed himself.
Also... Don't you ever drive your mom's car without permission.
Then Daniel left the restroom. Luke getting up and seeing his ear was bright red in the mirror. During lunch, Luke went to his sister in the cafeteria.
Hey, Dad came to school today, but we're going to have to call Dr. Green.
Why? What happened?
Luke showed Judy his right ear, still bright red.
God, it hurts.
Did Dad do this?
Yeah, he's going crazy, asking me where the mannequin was.
Did you tell him?
Of course. He was threatening to pull my ear off if he didn't.
Judy called Dr. Green at that moment.
Hello, Doctor. Had Dad just physically abused Luke over the mannequin?
Okay, if that's the case, I'd call the authorities and have him reported. Is there proof of what he did?
Yeah, my brother's freaking ear is about to burst.
Look, I understand that you're rebelling, but both of you, okay?
Look, our dad's not well. He'll hurt us as long as they...
No.
Okay, look, the cops will not do anything unless you have proof. If you can record your father physically hurting you, then we can have him committed without it. It's just a he say, she say.
Okay, thank you, Doctor. But we're sure to have proof.
And then Judy hung up the phone.
Hey, I have an idea.
Okay, what's the plan?
He said we need proof in order to go forth with anything. It's one thing to be unstable, but it's another thing if you're hurting your own children because of your mental health.
Once Luke and Judy were dismissed from school, they headed on home. When they got in, Judy started yelling out to Daniel. She took her phone out and started recording.
Dad, are you home? Come out.
Go on, Judy. Let's find the mannequin.
Oh, the mannequin's nowhere. Not in the kitchen and not in the living room. Oh, it has to be in Dad's room.
So both Judy and Luke entered into their father's room quietly. There it was, the mannequin in the corner of the room.
Where can Dad be?
I'm not sure, Judy. Let's just get the mannequin. So they both took it and laid on the back seat of the car. They drove off, heading to the north side of town where the river was. They parked the car on the side of the road, both took out the mannequin and headed over to the river. Judy was also carrying a metal baseball bat that she brought along. They put the mannequin on the ground. Judy handed her phone to Luke to start recording her.
Hey, is it recording?
Yeah.
Once I'm done, you send the video to Dad. Let me know when you press record.
Right, it's recording. So Judy raised her bat.
We love you, Dad. But this is for your own good. We're sad too, but you have to let go. Mom's gone.
With that, Judy started to hit the mannequin with the bat like it was a piñata.
Mom is gone, and she's never coming back.
Judy smacked the head of the mannequin, and it burst open.
Hey, Judy, what's that inside the mannequin?
Both Judy and Luke bent in to take a closer look.
What the fuck is that?
Both of them tore open the skull of the mannequin, only to reveal the head of a dead corpse rotting inside. They both jumped back, started coughing from the dreadful smell.
My God, is that Mom?
Judy leaned in closer to the mannequin.
God, I think it is.
The face of their dead mother's corpse stared back at them. They were both horrified of everything that was now happening.
God, we need to call Dr. Green. Forward him the video. Isn't it better if we call the cops? We're minors. They won't believe us unless there's another adult involved who knows what Dad was going through. Look, the cops won't believe us, so Dr. Green can back us on this.
Luke tried to forward the video to Dr. Green, but he wouldn't go through.
He tried to call him, but he went straight to voicemail. One of us has to find out where Dad is while we go get Dr. Green, Judy said.
I'll try and talk with Dad. You go to Green's office. I know you can Google his address. They then took off. Judy ended up calling an Uber to pick her up while Luke drove off to Dr. Green's office. Arriving home, Judy held her cell phone in the air.
Dad, you at home? Dr. Green and the police are on their way. It's best if you come out.
Suddenly, Judy heard noises coming from inside the basement. She walked over and opened the door and walked inside.
Dad, are you in here?
Judy turned on the lights in the basement and was shocked to see several mannequins standing around, all of them dressed in clothes as if they were real people.
Judy, my dear, I believe we have to have a little talk, honey.
Meanwhile, Luke was racing over to Dr. Green's office, but it had closed early that day. The secretary was still inside and saw Luke at the door.
I'm sorry, Dr. Green stepped out to see a patient. Can I help you?
Was that patient Daniel Brolin?
I'm sorry, I cannot reveal the details of this matter.
Come on, it's important. He could be in danger. He's my father and he's very ill.
The secretary was hesitant to say anything, but Luke knew that he'd gone to see his father. So he took off and headed home. When he arrived, he bolted his way into the house and started searching for everyone.
Hello, Judy, Dad, Dr. Green.
Just then Luke felt a big whack to the head from behind him. His dad had smacked Luke in the back of the head with a wet trowel. He fell to the ground, unconscious. Hours passed, It's 3 o'clock in the morning. Luke woke up inside the basement, strapped to a table with his hands tied. He saw that his legs were covered in white plaster and that he couldn't move them. "You weren't supposed to wake up, Luke." Daniel slowly walked over to Luke with cement tools. Luke started to yell at his father. "What's gotten into you? What the fuck is wrong with you?" "Luke, you have to understand that the only way I'll be happy is to have my family again. We as humans die eventually. We never live long. Our bodies are then buried along with every other corpse in the ground. Not us, Luke. No. Mannequins can live forever. And I've realized that we can also be mannequins."
"No. Dad, this is horrible. I don't want to be a mannequin."
"I'm afraid it has to be done, Luke. Just like your sister over there." Daniel pointed at one of the mannequins standing by the wall. It was a mannequin of his sister Judy, holding her hands in the air, as if she was trying to escape her father's torment. Wearing the exact same clothes she'd been wearing to school that day.
"No. No. No."
Luke screamed as his dad began to pour the white plaster all over his hands. He screamed for help, but it was no use. The plaster oozed inside his mouth and covered his entire head. And the screams and the yelling all stopped. Daniel then stopped and looked at his creations all around the room. He went to one mannequin in particular. It was his wife, Virginia. She was wearing that same brown wig from before. "Oh, we finally have our family again." Since when do mannequins bleed? By Bloody Spaghetti. Oh, that bastard Manny woke me up again in the middle of the night. I absolutely hate it when he does this. This time, I guess he had a good reason to wake me up like that. I just wish he hadn't been an asshole about it. Manny and I, we have a strange relationship, I'd say. Even our meeting was weird. He just appeared at my place one day. He was there, sitting on my couch, reading my copy of Dan Brown's Angels and Demons. Well, I'll admit this much, his appearance at my place wasn't random at all. I can swear I'd seen him looking at me as if admiring me from a distance for weeks before our meeting. It's hard to miss the guy. He sticks out like a thorn in a crowd's side. Given his odd-looking head, well, Manny's appearance is mostly unremarkable, other than what appears to be a pale white smiling mask permanently fused to the skin of his head. Well, it looks like he has a purposefully deformed mannequin head stuck on his body. Hence the name, Manny. Somehow no one else has ever noticed him. Usually people write me off as mental whenever I mention him, which is why I avoid talking about him to others. When I saw him sitting on my couch like he owned the damn thing, my instinctive reaction was to get mad. I yelled something obscene and pounced on the couch with the intent to maul him with my hands. What came next scared the living hell out of me. I hit the couch and flipped it over, but the bastard was gone. He disappeared on me before reappearing behind me and letting out that distinctive high-pitched chuckle of his. He said that he was going to play me like a marionette and then vanished again. I just sat there, flat on my ass, scared out of my wits. I had no clue what the hell had just happened to me. I'm still not entirely sure. It's been years now and Manny comes and goes. Whenever he shows up, I know it'll be one heck of a riot. He pops up and does his best to make my life hell, not letting me sleep by being an incredibly loud, unwanted roommate or by driving me nuts with his mostly moronic rants just before I go to sleep. Other times he shows up and just makes me feel like shit by giving me vivid accounts of horrible, horrible things about me and the world. His recollections feel as if he's feeding the imagery directly into my brain. I can quite see the horrors he's speaking of. Needless to say, that makes me feel terrible. I think he can even influence my dreams at this point. I swear, whenever I have a nightmare, I wake up to him standing at the edge of my bed, staring straight into my soul. Usually these nightmares, I think he gives me, are events from my past, amplified and perverted into haunting scenes straight out of some horror flick. Other times these nightmares are just distressingly weird things you'd not expect to see in your sleep. Like that one time he made me dream of me viewing black and white footage of what appears the main street of some city, devoid of people, with this dramatic music playing in the background. Well, the atmosphere of this whole thing felt incredibly off, but then came the truly horrifying part. Singing, quite a cheerful singing, came to flood my ears, forcing me to look around for the source of the sound. My dream self looked up and above it. Above me hung women dressed in 20s outfits, singing from the streetlights, lifeless, swaying softly in the wind, and yet singing cheerfully. I woke up in a cold sweat to be greeted by the pallid mug of that bastard. Over the years, he'd pull some nasty trick where he'd stand there in the distance, making sure I see him before pulling out a long black rod and stabbing himself somehow as if with some voodoo magic. I'd feel it wherever he stabbed himself. Usually the leg. God, it hurts so bad whenever he does this. He seems to have this gleeful expression on his face, like he's enjoying the pain, while I want to scream as a result of the sensation of a boiling hot metal rod slicing through my nerves. The first time was as shocking as hell. I'd bitten so hard through my lip due to the pain, I now have a scar there as a reminder of that day. But unfortunately, I've come to accept it as part of my experience with Manny. And that's not even the worst of it. The worst part about Manny isn't this sort of stuff, no. The worst part is when he pops out of nowhere and lets out a thunderous roar straight into my ear before vanishing again. Whenever he does this, I tense up like crazy. Oh, it's akin to having a cannon shot going off right next to you. Sometimes I stay tensed up for hours. Others, it goes away within minutes. After each encounter with Manny, regardless of what he does, I end up being stressed, vigilant and aggressive, and above all else, exhausted. Sometimes to the point of wanting to just throw myself off somewhere high. It's definitely affected me in more ways than one, hence why I mostly isolate myself from others. He is trying to ruin my life, I'm sure. I don't know why me, I didn't do anything wrong. Always loved helping people. I didn't put on the uniform for the pay. I only ever wanted to do some good, you know. The closest I could be to being a superhero, I guess. Well, I was sure he was trying to mess me up. Well, until tonight. This time it was different. He woke me up by shaking my body awake. Seeing his ugly mug before even fully waking up gave me that adrenal kick. I punched him square in the head. Although my fist never connected, it just went straight through his head. "Hey, hold up, doll," he yelled as I pulled my hand backward, cursing under my breath. "I'm here to help you," he continued. Well, I didn't believe him. He was just trying to mess with me again, I reasoned. So I tried ignoring him and going back to sleep. I shrugged him off and pulled the blanket tightly over my head. He shook me again. "Oi, Dolly, get up. This time I'm here to help. Pinky promise." "Oh, fuck off," I barked, trying to drown his presence out of my head with some pleasant memories. "Shh, they'll hear you," he shushed me. Well, something was wrong with that statement. Usually there were no others involved in his cruel jokes. I pulled the blanket from my head and looked him dead into his empty eye marks. "What are you talking about?" He mouthed, "Quiet down your tone." "Huh?" I questioned, confused and genuinely pissed off at this point. "There's three mannequins in your house. Oh, they don't mean no good, Dolly," he whispered. "Bullshit," I barked back with a whisper. I didn't even know why I was whispering, really. "Listen for yourself, Dolly," Manny hissed, pointing at where his ears should have been. I did as he said. It was dead silent. I was going to throw another fit at the creature that's been haunting me for the last few years, but then my thought process was cut short by the sound of footsteps. 2, 4, 6. My heartbeat sped up. I slowly got out of my bed, walked towards the bedroom door. I always kept it locked, even though I live alone. It's an OCD thing. I stood by the door and listened. Someone was definitely walking around in my house. 3 people, in fact. They were saying things I couldn't understand. Well, they were too quiet. My breathing was becoming shallow and my body was getting hot. I could feel my own temperature slightly rising. Manny whispered, "Told you." I just stared at him, and he took a step back. Well, that had never happened before. Some switch inside me flipped, and the bastard smiled at me. I just kept listening to what was happening outside the room. The pallid bastard opened up a closet and pulled out my 2 baseball bats before telling me to pick one. He knew what was going through my head. He knew exactly what I was going to do. I took one of the bats, the black one. It felt nice in my hand. Manny vanished. I cranked my neck and the door handle twisted. The door to my room swung open. And before me stood a literal mannequin. I could almost hear something snap inside. It didn't expect me to be awake. I moved swiftly, expertly, nearly took its head off with the bat. The sound of cracking, thick plastic boomed in my ears. The mannequin collapsed to the floor. I went out to the hall. Another mannequin stood with its back to me, this one white. I think there was something attached to its plastic hands. I took a swing to its back, and it bent in half before collapsing on all fours. A second hit to the back of the head. Wasn't moving anymore. The third one saw me, a brown one. It ran towards the front door. I followed. I wasn't going to get out just like that. I caught up to it. It started making pleading movements with its arms. Ugly piece of shit. I slammed the bat on top of it. I swung once, twice, thrice. I swung over and over again. Then it was crumpled on the floor, with many parts collapsed in on themselves. Once I was done with the third mannequin, Manny popped up again. He spat his poison in my ear once more. Tie him up and dump him in the garage for now. I did just that. I wasn't even thinking on my own. I was on an autopilot. Good thing the front door was unlocked. Well, the adrenaline wore off quickly and I was exhausted once more, completely worn out man. I headed back up to my bed, almost as if nothing had happened. I was pretty docile and relatively calm after that. Well, I passed out on the spot pretty much. Manny was nowhere in sight, thank God. I slept like a baby. Waking up this morning, I remembered what had happened the night before, and my mind raced again, forcing me to feel like the world would collapse on top of me if I didn't check the garage. The moment I got out of bed, cortisol filled my system up once more. I noticed a massive blood stain on the floor. Since when do mannequins bleed? If you're in Greensley, next to Forever 21, please look out for the mannequin in the window. The one that looks like it's crying. Well, I'm not a fan of shopping malls. I mean, why shop in real life when online stores exist? It baffled me that people preferred shopping in public when they could sit in the comfort of their own home with a frothy latte, the newest styles just a tap away. Well, my parents, though, are not exactly technologically advanced. I mean, sure, they own a phone and an iPad, which they're practically glued to all day. But Mum is convinced that if she uses her credit card online, some anonymous scammer will empty her bank account. Well, those things do happen. I'm not saying they don't. but Mom won't even online shop on big brown clothing sites, ones that have a very clear "We are not a scam" banner at the bottom of the page. Well, over the last year, she's been kind of forced to use online stores, but Mom still hates it. She still asks me 100 times if the transaction is safe, and then goes into panic mode when the page freezes. It doesn't freeze because of some faceless entity stealing all her savings. And it freezes because she taps buy now repeatedly. The only site Mom trusts is Amazon. It took her a year to fully get used to buying things. Well, I guess she was forced to get used to it. When we went into lockdown, Mom had to swallow her stubbornness. Well, unlike my mother, I don't go to the mall unless I absolutely have to. Or my friend drags me there on a day out. I prefer the park or maybe the local swimming pool. But Nina wasn't the type to argue with. When she rang me a few days ago, excitedly gushing about a shopping trip she'd been planning all morning, I felt like I had to say yes. I'd graduated back in May, and I'm taking a gap year before college next year. Nina was doing the same, but job searching wasn't on her mind. No, shopping was. She was talking so fast, so convoluted, I could barely understand her. But I got the gist of it. It was sale season, and Nina was eager to be the first in line. Now, I'm not sure if I've made it clear, but I hate going out in public. I've suffered from anxiety since I was a kid, and untreated, it bled into my teenagehood. I take meds for it, and I'm not as bad as I used to be, but I still hate enclosed spaces, such as our local mall. I'm fine going to school or work, but being in a crowd is just a no-no. Well, Greensley is a small town, and I like that. Nina wants to move to New York or LA, but city life terrifies me. I can't even go to the mall without freaking out, and I can't imagine what moving to a big city like New York would do to me. Anyway, I didn't exactly have a choice that day. Mom and Dad were at work, and I used the excuse that I was job searching with Nina. Well, it started out fun. We got takeout noodles from a fancy Japanese restaurant that Nina insisted on paying for, and we scoured Barnes & Noble. The problem started when Nina got to the clothes stores. I say stores, but she spent pretty much all afternoon in Forever 21. Well, sure, I like looking at clothes, but Nina takes ages. Last summer, during a heatwave, she took nearly 3 hours in one store. I was hoping history wasn't going to repeat itself. After all, I had told her multiple times I didn't want to spend forever in the clothing stores, and Nina had laughed, insisting that she wouldn't be more than half an hour. When an hour had passed and she was still staring at the same dress and bag combo, I realized I had made a mistake. 2 hours passed, then three. I'm not sure what I ended up doing. Forever 21 was right in the middle of the mall, just next to the food court. I knew the exits by heart. Once my stomach started twisting with nausea, an oh-so-familiar prick of panic creeping up my spine, my palms grew sweaty. I tried to follow Nina, tried to give her compliments, but after several pathetic ones, riddled with the same adjectives, I ended up walking around aimlessly. I tried to distract myself with my phone, but the smell of food was making me feel sick. There was a record store opposite. I spent maybe 2 minutes in there, but the music was too loud, and the crowd outside was growing. I felt like I was suffocating behind my mask. I had to get out. That's all I could think. I had to get out. I had to suck actual air into my lungs or I was going to die. Well, that was my mind talking. I know it was. I know it was stupid, but once the thought was rooted, I couldn't suppress it. I felt like I was drowning. I could no longer remember the exits. I could taste the noodles from my lunch in the back of my throat. I was going to throw up, my mind kept telling me. I was going to throw up, and everyone was looking at me. I find it hard to tell people that I'm sick, so I end up not telling them. I keep it to myself and pray that I start to feel better. Except by that point, I was shaking. I could barely breathe. I keep swallowing bile coating the back of my throat. When I found Nina standing in front of a mirror, holding a dress to her slim figure, I had to choke back a sob.
Hey. I tried to smile, tried to act like it was fine. Nina, we've been in here for ages. Oh, he's cute.
Nina cut me off, twirling around, her blonde hair a halo in her face. I've always envied her looks compared to mine. While Nina looks like a model, I'm kind of bland. In her hands were a combination, the exact same skirt. I struggled to figure out what she was talking about, when my gaze followed hers. Nina was talking about a mannequin a few meters away. Forever 21 had a guys and girls section, with the girls section being downstairs and the guys at the bottom of an escalator. Although in the girls section for the summer fall collection, there were a myriad of mannequins, both male and female. The one Nina was staring at was an adult male mannequin. It wore a tight black shirt, skinny jeans, and sunglasses. Like my friend, once I caught sight of it, I couldn't look away. Nina must have been thinking the same as me because she turned to me, a grin plastered on her lips. Min? She marched over to the mannequin and ran her manicure down the material of its t-shirt. This is the hottest freaking mannequin I've ever seen, she gushed. Are we totally sure he's not real? Well, I was fairly sure it, not he, wasn't real. And the thing was plastic, for God's sake. I couldn't help agreeing with her, at least in the back of my head. The mannequin didn't look human. No, that wasn't it. But it didn't look like a mannequin either. Well, if that makes any sense. Nina's eyes were wide. She cocked her head to the side, her lips curling into a frown. I know this sounds crazy, but does he look familiar to you? I expected her to be joking around, but her expression was deadly serious. Like, well, I feel like I've seen him before. It's crazy, right? I folded my arms, giving the mannequin a once-over. Well, she was right. I didn't recognize the face because there wasn't really one, at least not at first glance. When I looked closer, though, there were facial features I couldn't ignore. Looking past the plastic sheen, the perfect jawline, I realized I was seeing exactly the same. But, well, I'd never say that. Nina needed glasses but insisted on wearing contacts on a prescription that barely helped her. I had lost count of how many times I'd had to yank her out the way of a car. Him. Nina, it's a plastic doll. But Min, how can you not see it? She snorted out a laugh. He's got actual eyebrows. Her eyes snapped to his lower torso and kept going. I knew where she was looking and I felt my cheeks grow warm. Nina, are you done? Her gaze snapped me. Why that much detail, though? Her lips curved into a smirk and she squealed, nearly bumping into a passing woman who shot her an odd look. Is it so he can show off to the girl mannequins? I was slowly losing my patience. They're probably making them more human-like to market the clothes better. Nina scrunched up her face before sighing with a nod. She took a step back. I didn't move. Maybe it was a sick feeling that was growing worse in my gut. But my feet were glued to the floor. I wanted to look at the mannequin properly when a bustling crowd of teenagers weren't around me. But part of me expected Nina to marvel at it more. But she shook her head with a grin. Yeah, you're right. He's plastic. But he's kind of hot, right? She waggled her eyebrows at me. Is it weird that I'm crushing on actual plastic? I ignored the comment and forced myself to follow her to the changing rooms, where she spent nearly an hour picking out the best outfits. When Nina was done, the store was emptying. A sales assistant crept up behind us. She looked tired, though was somehow maintaining a Cheshire Cat grin. I wondered how many girls like Nina showed up on a daily basis. We close in 5 minutes. You two should head to the checkout counter. Nina bought 4 t-shirts and 3 dresses. When she was swiping her card, my dancing stomach decided it really needed to go to the bathroom. I was half aware of a bathroom by the changing rooms. Hey, I'm going to head to the bathroom, I said, my cheeks blazing. Don't wait for me, okay? I'll walk home. She
Just the idea of sitting in Nina's car without aircon for a 45-minute drive made me want to curl into the ground and die. Nina looked baffled, but she nodded.
Are you okay?
Her eyes narrowed. Min, you look kind of pale.
I'm fine, I choked out, backing away. It's my time of the month.
Okay. Nina's expression brightened then.
Do you need a pad?
I shook my head.
No, it's fine.
She nodded, swinging her bags around. Well, the motion made me feel worse.
Hey, do me a favor. My phone died. But I really want a picture of Daniel. Can you get one when you come out?
Daniel? She giggled. Behind the counter, the sales assistant laughed along.
The mannequin. You know, the hot one.
Ah, yes. The sales assistant nodded while folding up Nina's gloves. Well, mannequins get a lot of attention, particularly the male ones. Well, we have had several boys taking selfies with the girl mannequins, too. It's adorable. Nina, with her usual charm, grinned.
The one by the door is gorgeous. How do you make them so lifelike?
No idea, the sales assistant shrugged. Been here a while. I only started last year.
Hey, Min.
Nina was now in Nina land, though I wasn't surprised.
Do you think if we grab him and run, we'll get caught?
I didn't reply, dashing instead to the bathroom. Don't know how long I spent in there. I could hear voices from outside, staff shouting their goodbyes between colleagues. The noodles from the Japanese place didn't exactly agree with my stomach. I scrolled through my Instagram, searching for anything to distract me. Nina had already made a post with an unflattering snap of the two of us in front of a mirror. I liked and commented. I thought it was food poisoning, but I didn't throw up. I had the stomach pains and nausea, but I didn't actually barf. When the pop music stopped playing over the speakers, and the lights flickered off outside, I panicked. Well, the word wait was stuck in the back of my throat. I swallowed it down. The bathroom, thankfully, was well lit. I did a quick once-over in the mirror. My cheeks were pale and I looked horrific, but at least Nina was gone now. When I hesitantly slipped through the gap in the door, I stepped out straight into the pitch-dark hallway leading back into the store. The lights were still on, though there was no sign of anyone. The checkout counters were empty. The shutters were yet to be pulled down, so I hurried for the exit. Instead of leaving the store, though, I found myself gravitating towards the hot mannequin once again, playing with my phone in my hands. Well, Nina wanted a photo, and sure, I could tell her I didn't have time, but part of me wanted to snap a picture of it, too. There was something about it, the way it was perched on its stand, human-like features carved into glistening white plastic. It gave me the creeps. Still, though, I took a few steps back and held up my phone, snapping several shots. When I looked at them, they were blurry and unfocused, so I tried again, this time with the flash on. I removed the Ray-Bans so I could get as much detail as possible. But once I could see eyes that were far too intricate, I snapped more photos to get it over with. Those mannequins' eyes were really freaking me out. If I suspended my disbelief for a moment, I found myself wondering how long the design had taken. Someone must have spent hours carving the iris in each individual lash. I wasn't really paying attention to the mannequin. My attention was on the photo. I was staring at it, and the twisting feeling in my gut just got worse. But it wasn't because of food poisoning. No. I could have sworn the mannequin had blinked. Peering at the photo, it didn't look like a full blink. No. More like his eyes were flickering. Moving. Oh. The voice, the male voice which sliced into the silence, a voice that shouldn't have been there, sent me stumbling backwards, my phone flying out of my hands and hitting the floor with an audible crack. In front of me, the mannequin's eyes had blinked open and were half-lidded, staring at me in confusion. No, I wasn't crazy.
I was seeing emotion, actual emotion in its face. When it brought up its hands to stare down at them and then claw at its face, I realized it had fingernails. It moved like a human being, not like a plastic doll. Well, the mannequin's gaze was stuck to its own hands, and then its eyes, its human eyes the color of warm chestnut, were settling on me. The longer I looked at it, or I guess him, I understood what Nina had said was right. The mannequin didn't look human. It looked too human to be plastic, to be a doll, and yet when I drunk him fully in, trapped in my own state of paralysis, he was starting to look less plastic, like it was dripping away, revealing light tan skin. Fuck. The mannequin blinked, his voice a soft croak. When he blinked again, this time rapidly, I glimpsed veins of dark red bleeding to life. My heart catapulted. There was no way, I thought dizzily. There was no fucking way that much detail had been put in. There was no way I wasn't looking at a person. How long has it been? Its words were hitting the sound barrier, but I wasn't registering them. All I could think was that I had to get out. Whatever was happening, I wanted no part in it. I was hallucinating, I thought hysterically, taking slow steps back. One step. Two. But I couldn't turn around. Not yet. I couldn't stop staring at the mannequin, which was looking less and less like a mannequin by the second. I wasn't staring at a plastic doll. I was looking at a boy. No, a man. Maybe 19 or 20. His expression. I could only see pain. I could only see fear. And it didn't make sense on a mannequin's face. Because I was supposed to be looking at one, right? I'd been around him all afternoon, following Nina around. I'd passed him multiple times, and not once did I wonder if there was a living, breathing human under there. What I was seeing now defied logic and science and reality. It shouldn't have been real. It shouldn't have been staring at me right in the face. And so I did what any other person would do. I dug down, grabbed my phone, and I ran. At least, I tried to run. I'd only taken three shaky steps before a sharp yelp filled the air. When I twisted around, the mannequin had crumpled to the floor. When he lifted his head to look at me, I caught tears glistening on those perfect cheeks. He was crying. "Please," he croaked, struggling to get up. But his body was failing him. Every time he tried, he dropped back down with a startled cry. I found my gaze gravitating towards his cheeks, and I swore something was chipping away from his cheek, falling away, tiny white flakes dancing in the air. Everything inside me, every instinct I had, was telling me to leave him, to run for it. But the boy was hysterical. It reminded me of a child who couldn't walk yet. When he failed to get up once again, I held out a trembling arm. "Please, you have to help me. I don't know where I am. I keep waking up and I don't know where I am. I see faces staring at me. I can't move. I can't fucking breathe." When he broke down, I found myself wrapping my hand around his arm hesitantly. Oh, I nearly let go, shivers spiking up and down my spine. I hadn't touched plastic. No, I touched skin. I touched skin that had been hardened to look like plastic. I couldn't help myself. The words slipped out. "You're a mannequin," I hissed out sharply. I couldn't stop myself from running my fingers up and down his arms, touching real skin. When I risked tracing his lips and nose and eyes, well, they were real. His hair, which had been slicked back, seemed to come to life, dark curls bouncing back into place. It didn't make sense to me. None of this made sense to me. He was a mannequin, but then he wasn't. He was an inanimate doll, And then he wasn't. The boy hissed out, waving me away.
Can you stop?
His eyes were wide, lips curled almost like an animal.
Do I look like a freaking mannequin to you?
Yeah, but...
It's the camera flash,
he muttered, more to himself than me.
The camera flash brings us back.
Before I could speak, he sent me a panicked look. His eyes growing frenzied.
Dad, is Dad here?
Dad? I repeated with a whimper. He nodded.
I don't remember much, except Dad. All I remember is drowning. I remember screaming into freezing cold water. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't shout or cry. I was gonna die. Then I felt arms around me. It was Dad. He pulled me out and helped me breathe again. He gave me my breath back.
There was a light smile on the boy's lips, as if he was reminiscing, before his expression darkened.
Then he wouldn't let us go. He wouldn't let me see my mom, and when I tried to get out, he did something to me. He took away my thoughts and my breath, and I was lost. I was lost for so long. And then this boy...
He trailed off, his voice breaking.
This kind boy. One day he brought me back. I don't know how, but I could breathe again. He told me he was going to get us out, all of us. He told me he was going to take us home. And I was going to see my mom again. And then Dad took him away. And I fell asleep again. I fell asleep until now.
My mouth was filled with questions, but I choked them back when he forced himself up, holding out his arms to steady himself. When I offered to help, he shook his head. I watched him stumble over to another of the mannequins, a pretty female one brandishing a light pink summer dress and Ray-Bans. I didn't want to look properly at her, because I knew when I did, I'd get the same feeling. I wasn't looking at a mannequin. I was looking at a person. I didn't want to think that the mannequin was just like the boy. Trapped behind a spell I still couldn't understand. Skin and blood and bodily organs armored under plastic. I thought about the way Nina had laughed at the mannequin hours earlier, shouting that the mannequin's body sent unrealistic expectations for women. Except, it was a real body.
Jessa,
the boy whined. He stood on his tiptoes, wrapping his arms around her and trying to heave her off of the stand. He twisted around to face me.
Don't just stand there. I need to get her down. A camera flash brings us back, so do the same to her.
And he was yelling, and I didn't have the heart to tell him my phone was dead. I'd maxed it out completely with the photos of him for Nina. I couldn't move. Watching the boy try to heave the female mannequin off of the stand, I wondered if I was losing my fucking mind. When he couldn't lift her, he dragged his feet over to a second male mannequin, one with a leather jacket and designer shirt underneath.
Noah, he said in a breath. I'll get you and Jess out of here, okay? Just hold on a bit longer. We're all getting the fuck out of here.
Without turning to me, his hand still grasping Noah's arm, the boy let out a choked sob.
What you did to me,
he said shakily.
Can you do it again?
My phone's dead, I said softly. But look, don't worry, I'm going to help you. The boy broke down, his knees hitting the floor.
I felt the emotion writhing through him. I need to get out,
he was whispering, tearing at his hair.
I need to get out. Please, I need to get out. Please, help me get out. I just want to go home. I want my mom. I don't want to be here anymore.
Somehow, I coerced words in my mouth.
You're not going to be, I said. I'm getting you out.
He looked skeptical, his gaze going to his lap.
All of us? You promise?
I nodded.
What's your name?
The boy lifted his head back to look at me, and I caught desperation in his eyes.
My name is...
Ben? A male grunt sounded, and the boy stiffened.
Young man, where are you? You know your father doesn't like it when you leave your stand.
Shit.
Ben grabbed me, struggling to pull me to my feet. His face was inches from mine, hot breath feathering my cheeks. If I had had any doubts before that he wasn't human, that moment crushed them.
The police,
he said, grasping my hands and squeezing hard.
Go to the cops and bring them here. I don't think I can run. I'll only slow you down. Listen to me. You have to get them to listen. Even if you sound crazy, get them to come here.
Well, I wanted to argue with him. I wanted to tell him that there was no freaking way the cops would believe me. I didn't want to leave him. I didn't want to leave him here to a fate worse than death if I failed.
Ben Maddox,
Ben whispered, his fingers entangled with mine, hot and sticky with sweat, and I reveled in the feeling of real human flesh. He was real. Ben was real, and I was going to get him out. I was going to end his nightmare.
My name is Ben Maddox.
He then gestured to the exit. The shutters were halfway down.
Go.
Footsteps.
I had to slap a hand over my mouth.
Oh, Ben. The man's voice was soft. You know I don't like it when you disobey me. Before I could speak, he jumped up on shaky legs and raised his arms.
All right, Dad. You got me,
he said loudly, and I took that as my cue to make a run for it. I didn't think, I just ran. I ran until I was at the mall's exit, stepping out into fresh, cool air. It was night, and the sky was pitch black. The police station wasn't far. I found myself sitting in a box-like room in front of a cop who looked about my dad's age with greyish hair and stains down his shirt. I'd been hysterical and out of breath when I'd run into the station. They provided me with a glass of milk that I kept sipping until my stomach complained. Could barely believe anything that had happened, and there were still holes I couldn't understand. Like how Ben and Jessa hadn't aged, and how their skin could look and feel so much like plastic. With doubt still haunting the back of my mind, I told the officers everything, ignoring their raised eyebrows and twitching lips. Let me get this straight. He eyed me like I was crazy, and I felt crazy. The cop had a notepad, but when I glanced at it, he'd only written, Forever 21, and mannequins. You're telling me the mannequins in Forever 21 are actual people? I nodded, gulping down the rest of my milk.
I know I sound crazy. Ben told me that, but if you just go there and see for yourself.
Ben? The cop raised an eyebrow. The door stood open, and a female officer strode in. I nodded.
Ben Maddox, I said sharply, and Jessa, I think her name was.
Ben Maddox? The officers exchanged glances before the man fixed me with a steely glare. He sat back, picking up his notebook and flicking through it. Young lady, have you heard of the Moorhead incident? Something cold slithered down my spine. I shook my head, even when I had, at least vaguely. Mama talked about it a few times, and maybe Nina, but I was never interested enough to ask them to expand on it. The woman came to sit opposite me.
Miss Atlas,
can you confirm you're talking about Ben Maddox and Jessa Sharp? Her eyes darkened. Because Ben Maddox and Jessa Sharp have been dead for 6 years.
What?
I couldn't resist a startled laugh, but the officers weren't smiling. Before I could continue, the woman was pulling out her own phone with a sigh. On the 7th of October 2015, 5 students from Moorhead University tragically lost their lives when their bus drove off of a bridge. They looked for the bodies, but apparently they were either swept out to sea or crushed on the rocks down below. She placed her phone in front of me. There was a photo of a news clipping showing a headline. But I didn't look at the headline. No. My gaze landed on a small, grainy picture of a group of college students, with Ben in front, smiling brightly, his arms around a girl who looked like she was mid-laugh, and a guy pulling a face.
Well, their parents wanted no traces of the incident on the internet for privacy, the woman murmured. However, I kept this. She let out a sigh. 19 years old, with their whole lives ahead of them. One of them kids was my friend's little girl. Poppy, they called her. She was studying creative writing. Poor girl wanted to be an author. Well, it felt like my reality was crumbling before my very eyes. That was what Ben had meant by drowning and being saved. But they weren't dead. Whoever Ben's father was had taken them. No, I shook my head, my heart in my throat. I jumped up, slamming my hands down. No, I'm telling you, if you just go there, you'll understand. I spoke to Ben. He told me he'd nearly died. He told me he almost drowned, but someone had saved him.
Someone, the officer repeated.
Yes, the store owner, the boss. If you're playing a prank, it's one hell of a sick one, the woman said. But let those kids' souls rest in peace. When it became evident that they weren't listening to me, I begged them. I begged them because all I could think about was Ben and Jessa and the others being trapped there. When the mail officer finally caved, the two of them drove me to the Greensley Mall. When I was back in front of Forever 21, the police by my side, I was confident. An oldish-looking man wearing a crinkled suit was standing outside, letting the shutters down. When he caught sight of us, his eyes narrowed, before he pasted on a smile.
Evening, officers. He gestured to the shutters. I'm about to close up.
He choked out a laugh.
Ah, it's been one hell of a day. What can I do for you?
Well, I'm going to have to ask to look inside, the mail officer said, like it pained him to say it. The young lady here says your mannequins are actually people. He cleared his throat. Specifically, those of the Moorhead victims. The man's expression crumpled.
Oh, wow. Not sure I understand.
It'll only take a second. The mail officer rolled his eyes. When the man pushed up the shutters, I rushed inside. The first thing I noticed was Ben was gone. Jessa was still there, though a sweater had been thrown over her. Still, I ran over to her and shook the mannequin, uncaring how insane I looked.
Jessa,
I whispered, before twisting around to face the officers. Hey, do any of you have a phone? If you take a photo, they'll come back. The female officer shook her head. She joined me and knocked on Jessa's head. You're telling me this mannequin right here is 19-year-old Jessa Sharp?
Yes.
I was shaking and my blood was boiling. They didn't believe me. They didn't fucking believe me.
Well, Ben was right here. He was here. And that guy?
I pointed to the man. He did something to him. The man raised his arms with a scoff.
Young lady, I have no idea what you're talking about. If you're talking about one of the male mannequins, I put him in the back for polishing. Well, I don't have any kids, I promise.
He was laughing. This bastard was laughing at me. And I looked out of my mind.
Then bring him out, I said stiffly. If you use flash in front of their eyes, they'll snap out of it.
That's enough. The female officer grabbed my arm. Ma'am, I know what game you're playing, but I should arrest you for wasting an officer's time. Her grip was tight on my arm, and she dragged me from the store. You're a disturbed little girl who needs psychological help, she spat. Jesus Christ, things you kids come up with these days to get attention. I was taken back to the station, and my mom was called. She didn't speak to me, keeping her head down. When we were leaving, and my mom was muttering about parking spaces and how much they cost, we passed the same room I'd been in. I glimpsed the store owner and the mail officer. The two of them were sitting together.
50,000, the officer murmured. I ain't going any lower.
The store owner cackled.
Brave, Tom. But you have yourself a deal.
He rose to his feet with a sigh.
I'll make sure to keep him in check.
Mina. My mom was pulling on my hand and dragging me from the station before I could try to tell her. Well, it's not like she believed me anyway. Well, I tried to tell her. I've told her multiple times. It's like talking to a brick wall. I went back to Forever 21 yesterday. Ben's in the window now. I feel like the store owner is mocking me, parading Ben in the window to show that he's triumphant. Oh, fuck him. I'm getting Ben out of there. So, do me a favor. If you're in Greensley next to Forever 21, please look out for a mannequin in the window. He's the one who looks almost lifelike. And if you look closer, it looks like he's crying. And so once again, we reach the end of tonight's podcast. My thanks, as always, to the authors of those wonderful stories, and to you for taking the time to listen. Now, I'd ask one small favor of you. Wherever you get your podcast from, please write a few nice words and leave a 5-star review, as it really helps the podcast. That's it for this week, but I'll be back again same time, same place, and I do so hope you'll join me once more. Until next time, sweet dreams and bye-bye.